Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this fourth episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Today we have with us Marco Giberti, the founder and CEO of Vesuvio Ventures, where he works with startups, venture and private equity investors, and corporate innovators, serving as a coach, advisor, interim executive board member, or angel investor.
The TAM, the events TAM, total addressable market, is even bigger because you have face-to-face and you have digital and hybrid on top of that, which means if you're a smart, entrepreneurial, innovator in terms of events, now you need to think and understand your industry and your community and analyze which opportunities are face-to-face for them and which opportunities are online. For example, I need to understand for that particular industry which opportunities are strictly face-to-face. I want to see the product. I want to touch the product. I want to do a demo. Those things happen face-to-face. There's no way to do that online. And which opportunities for that community are relevant online? For example, a webinar like this, some specific education opportunities, and combine online and offline in order to create a year-long experience for that community and keep your event brand alive, fresh, and relevant for that community.
Marco is a successful entrepreneur and investor with over 25 years of intensive experience in media, technology, and the live events industry. He is the founder and CEO of Vesuvio Ventures. After several years in a successful career as a corporate executive at Apple, Marco pursued his entrepreneurial ambitions and became co-founder and board member of Mind Opener, a leading publishing group in Latin America that was later sold to British Pearson Media Group. Co-founder and board member of eMind, an internet and media communications company that was sold to Liberty Media, and president, CEO, and co-founder of Mind Trainer, a firm specializing in the organization of major regional trade shows and events that was sold to Reed Elsevier after a successful long-term joint venture. Marco is a Harvard Business School OPM graduate and member of YPO, the Young Presidents Organization, and a frequent speaker at industry conferences. He's also a co-author of the best-selling books, The Face of Digital, focused on how digital technologies are changing the live events business industry, and Reinventing Live, about the always-on future of live events. He's the host and speaker at the Leader Pass Business of Events Masterclass program. Now, on to this insightful episode with Marco Giberti. Marco, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I'm delighted that I could actually catch you much earlier than what we were looking at. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Great connecting.
You have been watching the trade show and events industry up close for nearly three decades, and you really have seen it play out across the world. The biggest plus, I think, of trade shows is that we talk a lot about intent these days, the buyer showing intent. I can't think of a better demonstration of intent than someone walking into a business trade show.
Yes.
With that sort of background, what do you think really happened when COVID hit us a few years back?
Look, as you said, I'm around events for 30 plus years, which means I saw many movies during these decades. Some of those movies were love movies and others were horror movies. COVID started as a horror movie, to be honest with you, because we were all shocked about the fact that we were not able to meet face to face. And we all learned a model for decades and decades about connecting people face to face. And when COVID hit, everyone started thinking, okay, this is it. Our industry is going to basically be destroyed and we're out of business. And like always, human beings were very creative. And in less than 3-6 months, many organizers moved from face to face to online events. And As always, some people start saying, okay, wow, this is pretty cool. I don't need to fly to Singapore and spend thousands of dollars and days of my life or meetings or conferences. I can do this from my living room. And that's when we saw the explosion of event technology investments and companies raising crazy amount of money at crazy valuations, and live events are over and everything is going to happen online. Funny enough, at that time, I started writing Reinventing Live, which is a book that I wrote early in the pandemic days with a good friend of mine and colleague. And we start brainstorming in the middle of the pandemic about the future of events. And thank God we were pretty pragmatic on the fact that face-to-face, it's almost irreplaceable. We are humans. We connect face-to-face. I keep saying all the time, we build trust face-to-face. It's very difficult to establish a human connection on online meetings only. I'm not saying that is impossible. I'm saying that the human connection face-to-face is way more powerful. And because of that, live events are back. And now, if you see what happened very quickly, we moved from engaging very lightly with technology pre-COVID. I'm around event technology for 15 years, which means I was always frustrated on how slow is the events industry engaging technology. When COVID happened, everyone engaged technology, not because we want it, because we need it. I said all the time during COVID, we're not together because of love, we're together because of horror. We don't know what is going to happen, and we need to move these conversations online. And now, live events are back, breaking records in terms of revenue, audience, NPS, everything is back, is healthy. M&A across events is exploding, and the industry is back. Now, if you ask me, is hybrid and online events dead? My answer is no, not at all. There is a need for that, there is a market for that, and there is an opportunity for that. If you ask me, are live events gonna keep growing like we saw during the last 12 months? Probably not. I think that we're living a face-to-face anxiety. We all want to go back and meet face-to-face. That's what happened last year, and that's why those numbers were amazing. Is that sustainable for the next 10 years? Probably not. It's going to slow down. But for me, there is a clear learning and message. It's not one or the other. It's not online or face-to-face. Both event solutions could and should be relevant. Two, face-to-face continues to be probably one of the most powerful marketing opportunities. And if it's B2B, it's very difficult to replace. And that's why brands are heavily investing back in trade shows, conferences, corporate events.
I will circle back to the challenges of the face-to-face, and I will come back to that. But before that, let's talk about the hybrid model. I've been talking to a lot of people who have seen the industry up close, and a lot of them, obviously, if they've spent 20, 30 years like you, they have been in the physical face-to-face business. And a lot of them tend to feel that the online thing was a blip, and that's really not going to, it really doesn't have a place. I mean, it's fine. Like you said, it's fine. I mean, some people may do it, but that's really not what trade shows are about. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't agree. I think that old school events people will tell you that because they feel comfortable on a model that is extremely profitable, solid, and safe. Digital and hybrid is out of their comfort zone. Because of that, they will rather say, you know what, these digital events, whatever, they're not coming back. I don't agree. I think that digital events could and should play a relevant role in some specific event opportunities. For example, education. You don't need to fly into a conference and spend 3 days inside a conference for strictly education purposes. Online is extremely powerful and it works. That's why I think that conferences that are just about education are going to have a hard time. They're having a hard time. Mm-hmm. You need to add networking, meetings, the social aspect, the fun aspect in order to be relevant for your audience. But some corporate events, some associations are going deep into education through online opportunities, and they're doing extremely well. I think that what COVID teach us is that we can connect on a digital basis, and we learn decades of experience in a couple of years, because COVID was so powerful that we all have a crash course on Zoom and meetings like this in a couple of years. On a normal cycle, that could probably take a couple of decades. With COVID, it was an accelerator, and it happened really, really fast with all the good and bad problems, because the reality, many of the companies who raised hundreds of millions of dollars on crazy valuations are gone, and those investors and say, wow, that was a mistake. And on the other side, we can have meetings like this and feel comfortable instead of weird. That was the feeling before COVID.
Right. So what I hear you say is that if it is a primarily educational, which is sort of one-to-many delivery exercise primarily, that will thrive online, which is understandable because even before COVID, online education was a thing already.
Yes.
So that piece, I mean, is nearly as good as it can be.
It is good. Of course, it's different, but the value proposition and price could be extremely affordable and interesting. The thing that I keep saying in terms of before and after COVID for our industry, for events, when you are an investor, one of the most important things that you need to analyze is how big is your total addressable market, TAM, okay? And the first question that we ask entrepreneurs is how big is your TAM for this event technology or for this event? And before COVID, the numbers were X. You know, we all know that events, it's a trillion, multi-trillion industry. Nobody knows how big is it, because if you put trade shows, festivals, music, sports, whatever, it's massive, and nobody knows how massive is it. But what I'm saying now is that the TAM, the events TAM, total addressable market, is even bigger, because you have face-to-face and you have digital and hybrid on top of that, which means if you're a smart entrepreneurial innovator in terms of events, now you need to think and understand your industry and your community and analyze which opportunities are face-to-face for them and which opportunities are online. For example, if I'm an investor or an entrepreneur in one event for the sports industry, I need to understand for that particular industry which opportunities are strictly face-to-face. I want to see the product. I want to touch the product. I want to do a demo. Those things happen face-to-face. There's no way to do that online. And which opportunities for that community are relevant online? For example, a webinar like this, some specific education opportunities, and combine online and offline in order to create a year-long experience for that community and keep your event brand alive, fresh, and relevant for that community. That's how modern and innovative event organizers are thinking. In the past, and I was one of them, it's 3-day show. Okay, after that, we relax for 3-4 months. We start working again 6 to 8 months before the next show and, you know, rinse and repeat. Those days are over. Unfortunately, because honestly, it was pretty easy. Now it's way more complicated. Now your industry wants to connect with you on a regular basis. They want to extract more value from your event. And if you don't provide that value, they're probably going to move on.
To touch upon one point you just raised, there is an element of community building that is becoming part of running an event or running a trade show, right?
Yes.
And again, this is also something which has been happening in the digital world, if I may say so. So if you look at SaaS companies, they have been talking about building community for a while. There is a lot of talk about that.
Yes.
So this is now sort of coming here. At the same time, we all know that building a community is very, very hard, because getting people to participate, to actually engage is hard. How do you think that is really playing out right now?
I think that there is a massive difference between a digital community and a face-to-face community. When you go every year to a conference or trade show, you meet people on that particular event and you establish connections. That connection face-to-face is a million X more powerful than the digital connection. I keep joking about Tinder and real sex or real relationships. You know, the real thing will never be replaced for the digital thing. The real thing is important. And that's what's happening in conferences or trade shows or corporate events. If I go every single year to Davos or to, you know, whatever, CES, name your industry event, I'm part of that community. And most likely every single year I will meet with some people over there that I know that they're there, and I will save time and money meeting with them in Vegas and save a lot of travel or whatever. And also new people. Now, technology play a role into the new people, because using AI, matchmaking technology solutions for events, we're able to identify way before the event who's going, why, and if I want to meet with that people or not. And that is a game changer. I invested on an AI matchmaking technology for events, I don't know, 8 years ago. Right now, everyone is saying, yeah, of course, we're using matchmaking technologies with our app. 8 years ago, it was science fiction. Nobody was even thinking about that, and it was just the paper badge, scanner, and serendipity. Right now, if you take your time and you do your homework, which is not easy, by the way, pushing your audience to do the homework, you can download the app, understand who's going, understand who is the potential suggestions that the technology is telling you that you should meet and why, and coordinate your meetings, which means you can save time, money, and make your event experience way more productive.
What about the continuation part? That is where I think the hybrid bit comes in. So you are meeting these people. Do you see the post-event engagement?
That's the most difficult part. The post-event is the postpartum depression. You came back to your office or house after your trip to Vegas, and you have probably 10 or 15 leads or opportunities or conversations that were relevant. But reality happens, and reality basically explodes in front of you with meetings, crises, to-dos, and whatever. The post-event is the most difficult part. Nobody cracked the code yet in terms of keeping the conversation relevant post-event. And the reality is it's responsibility from the seller, the exhibitor, the sponsor, in order to do a good job on that front, because the buyer most likely will be distracted with reality. And it's fascinating, because that's one of the areas where I'm investing more time, because pre-event, there are amazing solutions. On-site, amazing solutions. Post-event, there are still a lot of opportunities, which means I'm very excited about post-event and ways to keep the conversation relevant. And I'm also very excited about on-site. I'm analyzing a couple of technologies for on-site that are quite amazing in order to maximize return of investment for sponsors and exhibitors, which means the beauty is events still early days in terms of innovation, and I don't think that technology is not going to be super relevant. Technology is going to be a critical part of the events industry innovation in the next couple of decades for sure.
Right. So let me sort of dig a little more here, which is interesting. The post-event engagement appears to be the big stumbling block. And this is a universal sort of challenge that I hear about. And as you rightly said, there is nobody who is really cracking the code, because just as an example, when you are So a lot of focus is on getting people to your booth as an exhibitor, and you do a bunch of things. A lot of them are known, very novel, very good, does the job, right? You're giving free coffee, or you're having a game where you can get some swag and people come there, and that's fine. But they may not be your buyers. They're definitely walking the exhibition, but they may not be your buyers. So there is a sort of a disconnect there. I mean, we go the mandate to marketing is the booth should be flooded, but like in B2B sales, the quality of the person or the lead is always a challenge. So
yeah,
how do you see that getting addressed or not getting addressed?
I think that the CMO, the marketing person who thinks that success is having a booth full of people, they're fundamentally wrong. I think that success is having the right meetings with the right people. And it's not about quantity, it's about quality.
Yeah.
And it's about results. Many brands are doing a great job analyzing post-show results based on their specific marketing techniques. And they do a great job following up with customers, building the relationship and closing the deal. And many brands are complaining about the event results, but they're not doing nothing following up the leads. And they did nothing pre-event in terms of inviting their audience, qualifying their leads, and facilitating those meetings. Which means I keep saying the same thing for 30 years and nothing changed. The event is not the responsibility for the event organizer. The event is the responsibility of a partnership between the event organizer, the brands, and media partners, associations, the industry. The event organizer is just a connector with brands, buyers, media, associations, strategic partners, and the event organizer job is to partner with all of them in order to generate enough content and an attractive event opportunity to bring the right audience to that particular city and venue. Of course, the event organizer is a big part of the whole thing because they own the venue if it's a for-profit and they make money with that. But a good event organizer without the right partners is not going to be successful, which means you have to partner and work very hard with each of your partners in order to activate those opportunities and be sure that when your audience fly to Vegas and they are there, they know exactly what to do, which are the relevant meetings, why, which is the relevant content and education, why, and which is the fun part. Because again, we're all humans, and if we work hard for a couple of days, we want to have a good event or a good party or a good, you know, golf tournament or whatever is fun for that particular industry.
The challenge, I think, is multifold, as you say. So it is not purely purely something you can put on the door of the organizer. I mean, as an exhibitor, you have responsibility. And very interestingly, you mentioned media and other partners. They have a role too. To making this successful for the exhibitor. End of the day, a trade show will succeed if the exhibitors succeed and the buyers who have walked the exhibition succeed in terms of connecting and finding solutions that they're looking for, right? So end of the day, the organizer is literally a platform that you talk about. They're exactly. They're providing the platform. But the people who come in here, that the two sides that need to benefit, it's one, the people who are walking, the buyers, walking the aisle, and those who are bringing their wares. And that connection, qualification, connecting the right people to the right vendor, and then follow up seems to be the complexity that has not been fully cracked yet.
Yes, but one lesson again that I learned 30 years ago and today is still as relevant as it was 30 years ago is a successful event, it's all around the buyer. If you have a lot of sellers, exhibitors, sponsors wanting to launch an event, you probably launch the event or build that event because the revenue is there. But unless you have the buyers, that event is going to die after one or two editions. The buyer is by far the most important part of the B2B event experience because if you don't have enough quality buyers interested to go there on a regular basis, there is no way to sustain the revenues coming from your sellers, the sponsors or exhibitors. And many event organizers, they're super excited because they have a lot of sponsorship dollars committed, but they didn't invest enough time analyzing if the buyer need is there. As you probably heard, we launched an events venture group if you're an event entrepreneur and you're launching events, finding capital and strategic advisors and support is very difficult. It's not like in tech. If you launch any tech startup, you have venture capital, angel groups, advisors, you name it. There is a whole ecosystem. For the events industry, there is nothing. Of course, there are great associations and there are great content opportunities, but if you need to raise money and find the right partners and mentors and support, there is nothing. That's why with a group of friends, we launched Events Venture Group, which is a nonprofit initiative for identifying and educating event entrepreneurs and help them financially and also strategically to launch events and grow events and hopefully in the future sell those events to the Reed, Informa or the big guys of this world that they continue to buy events as a way to support growth. When we start talking with this group about this initiative, the thesis was very simple. It's look, if 30 years ago I was happy enough to have a group like this to invest and advise my launch, my event launch, I could save years of time, years, and make it bigger and better and enjoy the financial benefits with investors. That's what we want to do. Some of these lessons about focus on the buyer, focus on growth opportunities using the right technology and the right marketing and strategy are way more important than money for those entrepreneurs. And that's what we want to help with EVG, with Events Venture Group. We want to give them access to capital, of course, because it's important. But more than that, we want to tell them, look, this technology is amazing for this and that. These vendors are amazing because this is what they're doing. Some of our members, this group is mostly event entrepreneurs who are lucky to, you know, have liquidity and success selling their events, and now they want to give back. They want to invest their time and money helping the next generation. And some, if you read the names, they're really, really successful people in the industry. We'll see. It's early days, but in less than 2 months, we have 30 members joining as investors and advisors, and we saw almost 40 events opportunities, which means we want to keep building early stage events because with all due respect to the big guys, innovation happens with real entrepreneurs, and these real entrepreneurs are going to keep building and innovating in our industry, and that's exactly what we want to support, which means, as I said before, I believe that this continues to be a very entrepreneurial industry, and groups like EVG want to support that entrepreneurship as aggressively as we can.
I would really like to come and have a much detailed chat completely focused on the venture fund, because I think people need to understand how it works. Because as you rightly said, tech entrepreneurs start with the idea, what is my pitch deck which I'm going to take to my investor and get money? Yeah. But that's not the case in the event space at all. So I think people need to understand.
No, the reality is that money is a commodity. You can raise money from a rich uncle or a VC, but unless they give you added value, money is just a commodity.
Absolutely.
What we're doing with EVG is more than money. We're giving you the access to almost unlimited knowledge because our members are festival experts, sports experts, trade show experts, corporate events experts, association events experts, which means through these members, you have access to almost unlimited knowledge in each event category. And if you have their time, attention, and investment, you have access to amazing mentors and shortcuts into accelerating your events. And also, I think that as you know, events M&A, it's a massive category as well. When the founder is ready to sell their event, having a group like this in your cap table as an investor, it gives you tremendous opportunities to have perspective and analysis on which and how is the best way to find path to exit. You know, after investing 5-10 years building events like this, the founder needs to maximize the exit opportunity as much as possible, and having smart investors in your team, it's priceless.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
If you're an event organizer and you're not paying attention to technology, you're assuming a massive risk. And unfortunately, it happened. For many event organizers who were not paying attention into the digital part of the business, they pay the price for that. Event organizers who really invest in data, analytics, digital, connecting the community, as we discussed before, before, during, and after, they enjoy the benefits.
You are listening to a BizCast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode. You have written two books, Marco, and both are seminal in many ways, because when you try to look around to find books about the trade show and events industry, there is very little, literally, very little. I mean, there's a lot of blogs and stuff like that. A lot of the event tech companies have been developing content and so on. So people are doing that. But there is nothing which is sort of cogent, coherent, complete in many, many ways. So you, in the first book, I will not go into the depth, but the first book, The Face of Digital, you talk about disruptive forces which are transforming the events landscape.
Yes.
I would like to know, what are these disruptive forces that you see, which people should be paying attention to, and possibly they're not?
Yeah, it's funny. Face of Digital, I don't remember the year, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
In perspective, we were saying things that basically happened. We were saying, look, if you're an event organizer and you're not paying attention to technology, you're assuming a massive risk. And unfortunately, it happened. For many event organizers who were not paying attention into the digital part of the business, they pay the price for that. Event organizers who really invest in data, analytics, digital, connecting the community, as we discussed before, before, during, and after, they enjoy the benefits, which means I think I don't remember everything that we said during The Face of Digital, but The Face of Digital was a book that I wrote with Jay Wentra, which is a co-investor and partner and friend. And we are both geeks, and we are both always, obsessed with technology. And we wrote this book as a way to do a little bit of catharsis about how we see technology impacting the live events industry. And the second book was about, as I said before, Reinventing Live was a book in the middle of a very special situation. And the thesis of that book, with Denzel Rankin, a very smart events consultant and leader in the industry, the thesis on that book was, wow, this COVID thing is going to change everything. What could happen? And we brainstorm about some specific things, good, bad, and ugly, that could happen with our industry during the pandemic and on a post-pandemic world. I always said The Face of Digital is more techie, geeky, technology-centric. Reinventing Life is more strategic, thinking about rethinking the business of events. And after that, I did the Business of Events Masterclass, which is an online program where I invited probably 10 speakers to share their own views about the business of events, which is another area that I believe that there is very little information. There's a lot of information about tactical stuff, meeting planning stuff, how to organize an event from an operational basis, tactical marketing, but there is almost nothing about the business of event. Again, I need to launch an event, I need money. How do I raise money? I need to hire the team. I need to analyze path to exit or deal with partners. And the masterclass, it's all about that. It's basically for event entrepreneurs. It's on video format, on demand, and I was super lucky to work with 10 or 15 speakers who are leaders in the industry, and they were super open, sharing their own views with the content. And I believe some people write me and say, look, this was priceless for my own business, because now I have content and validation telling me what to do in some specific areas that basically there is no information available.
You do talk about platforms becoming very critical, building platforms becoming very critical. Do you see anyone actually building a platform for the entire industry or building a community for the entire industry, which you think is actually starting to do the work?
Everyone, not everyone, but many organizers will tell you that they're no longer events, they're platforms and they're active 365. And some of them are really doing important efforts and investments into that direction. But many others is just cosmetics and they're just doing a 3 or 4 day trade show and that's it. I believe that there is a new generation of event organizers who are fully aware on the fact that 3 days is not enough. And if you want to keep charging the amount of money and effort that sellers are investing in those trade shows, we need to give them more added value and return of investment. And that's where the platform model starts to be relevant. I believe, and I don't want to name any brand in order to avoid any sensitivity, but some brands across events, conferences, and trade shows, they're doing a great job building platforms. And because of their continued investment in education, online events, small regional events, and that brand is the place to meet in that particular industry. And because of that, those brands, when they sell those brands to, again, the informers or read of this world, the value on those brands is way bigger than a traditional trade show or conference. There is in M&A for events, there is a premium that the buyer is happy to pay if they can see the data, if they can see the engagement, if they can see different metrics that are relevant in order to understand that that brand is more than a trade show. There is way more engagement opportunities on that community, and they can monetize that. If you see what Informa did with Industry Dive, or many others are doing with non-traditional event assets, is because sophisticated organizers are realizing that there is way more equity value on brands who are capitalizing more than the 3 days in Vegas. And funny enough, in the face of digital, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I don't know how old is the book, honestly, I should check. But we were talking about exactly that issue, is if you really want to maximize value as an event entrepreneur, you need to build more than just a face-to-face connection.
And where do you think the buyers stand on this? I mean, do you have any sense of how the buyers are reacting to these initiatives from whoever is doing it? That's question number one. And question number two is, do you think that this platform initiatives will remain organizer and trade show centric, or can we do a pan event platform which can have the buyers? I mean, just for a lack of a better example, a LinkedIn of sorts, where if you are a buyer, you are part of that. And if you are a organizer, you are part of that. If you're an exhibitor, you are part of that. And then it becomes much easier to manage, and those conversations instead of logging into 20 different apps, you are doing it on one, or one or two, whatever.
The first question is a great question, because the buyer is changing. The buyer is no longer boomers or Gen X. The buyers are millennials or Gen Z. And their expectation about a live event, a trade show, or a conference is different. Which means, again, smart and sophisticated organizers are studying a lot about what matters to them, because boomers and Gen X, they have a different role in terms of your audience, which means that's a separate conversation, deep and complicated. But the new buyer is different than the old buyer. I'm not saying better or worse, it's different. Their expectations are different, and their expectations on understanding the event faster and better is way more strong and important than previous generations. In terms of having a platform agnostic for buyers, I have a hard time thinking that that could work, because buyers are vertical, which means if you are in the plastic industry, you really want to understand about the plastic industry. Or if you are in fintech, you really want to connect on fintech. Each vertical provides added value for that buyer. It could be some exceptions for sure, but I believe in verticals for events, because I believe in quantity, in quality, not in quantity, which means my thesis around events is I don't care if it's 200,000 people. I really care if I need to meet 200 people. I want to be sure that those 200 are there and I can meet with them at the right time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What percentage of the new buyers are actually millennials and beyond, that is beyond means closer than the boomers? What is your sense? What is the mix today?
There are a couple of good studies. I think one is from Freeman. The other one is they presented at CISO, at the CISO conferences. I'm not going to give you the numbers because I'm sure that I'm going to be wrong. But there is solid data supporting how important are Gen X and millennials coming into the events industry. And there are also, I think, again, that it's a Freeman research that they're giving you great tips about their expectations. It's important to know that the numbers are way bigger now on those generations, but more important is to understand their expectations about a specific live event. And again, as an organizer, you really need to pay attention.
What kind of exciting new technologies are you seeing in the horizon? I mean, you are yourself a geek. You have been looking at event tech for a long, long time. You are invested in that space. What kind of new technologies, interesting ideas are you seeing emerging?
I mentioned that I invested in AI for matchmaking for events 8 years ago. Now everything is AI, which means AI continues to be a category that is going to bring tremendous opportunities for event organizers. And matchmaking is just one of probably 15 categories where AI could be transformational. You can save money with AI. You can do way more productive work with AI. You can research content with AI. It's endless, which means AI as a category is going to be relevant at least for a couple of decades in many specific niches that are relevant for the organizers. And investors are paying attention in general about the category. I'm obsessed with capturing data on site, because I think that there are tons of wasted opportunities because we are not collecting the right data on site and connecting people or facilitating meetings or improving meetings. That's one area that I'm paying a lot of attention. I'm analyzing technologies that they capture meetings on site and they give the seller analytics and AI about how that meeting could be better. Things like that they sound like science fictions, like AI 8 years ago, but the technology is there. And if some smart entrepreneurs are able to customize our technology for events, it could be really useful for the events industry.
Do you see anybody making successful strides in actually developing a community and a platform?
Yes. And interesting enough, some of those companies are coming from media. They're media companies. They have great content and they want to use that content for community engagement initially on a digital basis and after that on face-to-face, which means there are great examples. But funny enough, some of those successful examples are not coming from traditional event organizers. They're coming from media players that they are struggling to keep their media business growing, and they move that into digital and after that face-to-face. But yes, it's happening. Content is so relevant that media companies, they have a very interesting advantage on that front.
Would you like to mention any that one should look out for?
Look, for example, I advise a media company who launch events in the construction sector, and the name is Iron Markets. They started as a media company. They created media content. After that, they created a platform. After that, they launched an event. And it's coming from media, content, platform, face-to-face. It's an interesting journey from a media thinking mentality into a platform mentality into an event. And again, in Forma, they have very interesting examples on content, platform, event. The challenge with big companies like Informa, Reed, or others is that they have, you know, literally hundreds of events and platforms. It's when I was with Reed 12 years. I sold my business to Reed after 12 years of joint venture. And I remember endless conversations about how difficult it is to copy-paste some of the models across so many industries. When you see vertical founders or entrepreneurs or companies that go super deep into one vertical, you have great examples, Money 2020, now Essential. Those guys were all about fintech. I also invested in events like InsurTech or now Manifest, which is all about logistics technology. When you have that deep knowledge about that particular vertical, for the companies with hundreds of events, it's not easy to go as deep as you can go when you're a founder going deep into that particular community. And you can build platform and you can build content and you can build opportunities that you know that are very, very important for that particular community because you know that industry extremely well.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I know that in India, I've seen for many years that typically companies which were publishing vertical magazines, say on architecture or on construction or computing technology, they typically would do a trade show because it was sort of, they already knew the market, they already had the connections with the buyer, both sides of the buyer. So buyer as in people who will benefit and buyers as in people who will pay them. So that model I have seen play out, but what was not there was the digital component.
Yeah, and more important, they have the trust from that industry. And when you have the trust from that particular industry, you can expand your value proposition. And of course, everyone wants to move to trade shows because we know that they could be very profitable and sustainable in the long run.
Yes. Final question. Do you see any move of a good aggregated content space? I mean, there are individually very, very, very deep work happening. I mean, there are many companies who are doing exceptionally good work in terms of news and, articles and stuff like that, but it's still vertical. They're doing it in a silo, so to say. But today, when you look at the quantum of content that is out there, the brands, the kind of content they're putting out, whether event companies or event tech companies, there's a lot happening there and there's a lot of material, but the only way to find them is either if you are already familiar with the brand, go to their blog, look at it and so on, or you need to do a search on Google and hope that they have done their SEO right and you'll discover them. But there is no specific, I mean, I don't see it, and that's my question really. Do you see any place where if I'm an event industry executive or I'm a buyer, interested in what's going on, do you see any space where I can go to today and see content from, say, 200 brands and 100 writers and so on?
Well, I think that I'll go back to the partnership strategy. If you are the event and you want to provide that value proposition to your audience, you need to partner with the right people, which means if you go to a good event, you will see what you ask as part of that event. You will see that, of course, as part of the brands that are already represented, but also the media partners and their value proposition and content, the association partners, and all those ecosystem partners provide the exposure for that buyer as part of that event experience. And that event experience is, of course, face-to-face, but also year-long through the different activations. That's the way that I see it. You have examples on companies, for example, Material Bank, for me, is fascinating. Material Bank is a company for interior designs and architects. They basically send you examples of carpets or products if you're an interior design. It's an online platform, backed by SoftBank and other investors. It's a fantastic solution because the interior designer, they receive on their office those samples and they save a ton of time. But that is not replacing the trade show, which means it's not one or the other. There are platforms that can give you access to your industry products and services and technologies. But even with those solutions, still architects and interior designers are going to trade shows with a different specific need, which means going back to the digital or face-to-face, it's not one or the other. Hopefully there is space for both.
Absolutely. So any particular investment you are excited about currently that you have made? Any company which is exciting you a lot?
I just invested in a couple of events, real events, as I said, in technology, one sports events in rackets that is an industry that I like and I see growth from traditional events. And in terms of events technology, I'm probably investing in one new, but I'm not able to share it at the moment. And all my event technologies companies are on my website, which means it's all the information is there. And of course, I'm excited in all of them. That's why I believe that it could be a good opportunity.
Wonderful.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit TradeshowEngage.com. That is TradeshowEngage.com.
Any thoughts that I possibly didn't touch upon but you had in your mind for this session today?
No. I think I will cover many interesting topics and hopefully I share information that is relevant for you and your audience. And please share my information and most of my content is online as well. And I'm very happy to enjoy the conversation with you.
Thank you. I love your website, by the way. It's really very informative and I will encourage people to go there and I will share all the links in the show notes with our audience. Marco, thank you so much for making time. I hope to talk to you again sometime soon, hopefully with your in between your busy schedule, talk about your books and talk about your venture fund.
Thank you very much. Great meeting you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics and strategies to leverage the first party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.